The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. All proudly brought to you by DraftKings. Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Midland, live from Bar Canada at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Glorious downtown Las Vegas. Still to come this hour, Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. You know what else we have to talk about, Kelly?
What's that?
Because we're talking so much Wembanyama at the outset. We got to talk about what maybe is the biggest betting thing in the NBA last night, the Fekakta injury reporting.
Yeah. We'll have a chat about that. Some breaking news coming down right now.
Uh-oh, what you got?
Stephon Diggs traded to the Houston Texans.
Wow. Well, Stephon Diggs traded to the Houston Texans. It soured in Buffalo, did it not?
Yeah, I mean, there was all that. I mean, what is it? Like the past 2 years, right? It wasn't even just last year where it just weird stuff with him on, off the field. I mean, both on and off the field.
What'd they get for him, by the way?
I don't know. It should just coming down.
Wow.
I'll be working on that. I'll get back to you.
So CJ Stroud, enjoy Stephon Diggs for all you Houston Texans backers who like that.
Yeah, all Schefter's got right now for draft pick compensation. So more to follow.
Draft pick compensation. Obviously, we will ramp up the NFL draft talk as the month continues. Right now, though, always a pleasure during college basketball season to have the Circa Millions Booby Prize winner from NFL handicapping days gone by. It's our friend Michael Montesano, who loves himself some college hoops, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He is en route to Buffalo to take a flight to come here. How about that for the Final Four? How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great. I can't wait to get out there.
All right, before we get into your thoughts on the Final Four, can you just give me a few minutes or even a few seconds or however long you want to on your thoughts on Victor Wembanyama and Defensive Player of the Year, sir?
Well, I'm trying not to get angry, as everyone else is. It seems like we're at the point now where anger is setting in when we look at all the defensive metrics for both Gobert and Wemby. I think last night just kind of put everything in perspective. I mean, what he did against Joker was unbelievable. Now, I know Joker had a great night, too. But Wemby with 9 blocks on the road, I think he's setting himself up for a nice little run the last 5 or 6 games. I mean, I quickly went to the defensive metrics at Basketball Reference for both the T-Wolves and the Spurs. And, you know, I love JVT, and I know he said Rudy Gobert is the anchor of that defense. But they have 4 other anchors as well when you look at the defensive metrics. And Wemby has nobody. And so, I mean, that has to take into some type of consideration. The voters, well, we're at the point now where the voters just, they have to use some common sense. Let's start using common sense when we look at everything. And if you use basic common sense with this, it's something we've never seen before. You cannot go back to the old ways and say, we're just going to give it to the best defensive player on a top 5 team. This is something that it's once in a lifetime possibly for a rookie. Even though he is a rookie, his numbers are head and shoulders above Rudy Gobert. And I'm nothing against Rudy Gobert. He's a tremendous defensive player, but he has significant help with him, surrounding him, and Wemby has nobody.
Any thoughts on Anthony Edwards getting 1 second place vote for MVP, which we are led to believe is Michael Wilbon's vote based on all of his comments?
Michael Wilbon, I love Michael Wilbon. I've followed him for years. If he votes for Anthony Edwards 1 or 2, he should have that vote stripped from him immediately. and that leads me to believe he might be voting for Gobert and not Wemby.
Yeah,
not
me too. I drew the line as well.
Without a doubt,
he's voting. He's a Gobert.
When you start hearing stuff, when you start hearing stuff like that, it's just like, hey, we're doomed. I think we're doomed.
All right. Well, let's segue to college hoops. Obviously, a Final Four with 2 spreads, and we just talked about it. It's 2 of the 5 biggest semifinal spreads. They go back, I shouldn't say of all time, they go back all the way to 2003. It gets murkier prior to 2003, but those are 2 of the biggest 5 spreads since 2003 in semifinal games. Where do you stand on both of these games? Do you feel like, and you are a guy who has a Crimson Tide future as well, let's put that out. It's the Huskies by 12. Let's start with this game. Can Bama cover? Can they win it outright?
Yes and yes. And again, I'm not trying to play a homer here because I have tickets. I'm just trying to use talk from an analytical point of view. When you have 3-point variance the way Alabama has, I mean, they could get extremely hot. We've seen it before. And we've also seen UConn in this tournament. I've gone back and looked at the numbers. They have not shot the ball particularly well from 3-point range. I think the key offensive metric for Alabama that I don't know if anyone's talking about is what are they going to shoot from 2-point range? Because they like to get in the lane. It's going to be tough trying to score over Klingon, and they can do it. I mean, with the exception of the Illinois game, every team in the tournament, I even went back to the Big East tournament, every team shot over 40% from 2-point range. And obviously if Alabama goes 5 for 33, they're not going to win. If they hit their average 10 or 11 from three, and they shoot 40% from 2-point range, easier said than done. I understand all that. This game will be close, and they might have a shot to pull it out at the end.
Yeah, I by the way, Nate Oates might be my favorite coach in the country at this point. Like, I just think that he's fantastic. He is fantastic. I think he's figured out some stuff that others haven't quite gotten to. His ability to recruit not just from high school but also in the portal has been awesome. They're super likable, and it's going to be fascinating what this approach is to try to beat a Goliath. Again, a team that we talked about yesterday. Like, if you just go through their run, UConn's I'm talking, since the sweet, I mean, for the whole couple tournaments, but since the Sweet 16, particularly from last year, again, 320 minutes of basketball in those 8 tournament games. They have trailed for 5 minutes and 50 seconds of them, including just 23 this year. And they, you know, what are the first four games, they have had margins of 39, 30, 32, and 31 at different points in those 4 respective games this year. So this is just going to be fascinating to watch. And then, of course, the game that precedes that, which is just every bit as fascinating. Purdue sitting in at 9 right now. This is sort of, you know, ticked up and down a little bit, but it's 9 in favor of the Boilermakers right now against NC State. And it's, you know, the narrative that we're hearing from most is, well, you know, Zach Edey, and boy, how is NC State going to defend that? How is Burns going to stay out of foul trouble? I was saying this yesterday. I kind of believe it's going to go the other way. And I feel like I'm on an island with this. Mike Somich kind of agreed with me yesterday, which is I almost feel like the officials are completely aware of this, right? And are going to bend over backwards after the 33-13 disparity in free throw attempts in the Elite Eight for Purdue. Their advantage, I should say, 33-13 free throw attempts. So they're going to bend over backwards the other way. How do you see this?
I've thought about that a lot the last couple days as well. I haven't made a play on this. I'm going to look at it a little bit more, but I mean, refs are humans. They hear what's going on in the media and what's being said. I think, you know, whoever's reffing these games, they will go back and watch the last couple games and seeing, okay, well, that could have been a foul. Well, that, I don't know, if he does that, that could have been a foul. I mean, you know, Edey got away with, you know, anything and everything in the last few games. So it's going to be very interesting. Will he get in foul trouble? You know, right off the bat, I don't know, but I do think he will get called for some calls that he hasn't been called for in the last few games. And the key for NC State is, are they going to make their – I mean, sometimes it always goes down. Can you make your 3-point shots? How are they going to do from 3-point range? They have guards that can play. They have some really, really underrated, gritty guards, and you need great guard play in the tournament to win. I think we've talked about this in the last time I was on. And if the guards can come to play, all the talk is about Burns. And I understand that he's a great player, but the guards need to come to play for North Carolina State to have a shot. And I think they could kind of keep it close. You know, the first half, the question is when if Purdue makes a little run, because we've seen the runs that Purdue has made the last few games, can they withstand those runs and get back into it?
Yeah, I just want to say that thing about the guards again, because I've had, you know, Adam Stanko for years on this show was saying this. He's certainly not the only one, but one of the more tried and true, you know, NCAA March Madness handicapping tenets is who's got the best guards. And if you look at the Cousy Award finalists, 3 of the 5 are in the Final 4, right? Mark Sears from Bama, yeah. Braden Smith from Purdue, Tristan Newton from UConn. And the other two, by the way, were Jamal Shedd, who got hurt, right? And so Houston didn't get there largely because of that. And Tyler Kolek from Marquette, who have obviously they had a deep run as well. So it's about as, you know, I have a formula, but that's about as good a formula as there is. So bottom line, these four, are you taking the dog plus the points in these? What are you doing?
I'm not going to take Alabama. There's actually, I'm looking at the first half of the NC State-Purdue game. I think I like that under the total. They're playing in a stadium, different sight lines. NC State likes to kind of control the tempo. They're not a tremendous outside shooting team, even though they do need to shoot well to be successful. Purdue's got a top 20 defense. You know, if you look at that first half, I think some jitters from both sides in a big stadium like that. It's not easy shooting in those stadiums. You know, I think that both, you know, all the teams will eventually get used to it in the second half. But the first half, I like that under Purdue and North Carolina State. But as far as the games go, I'm going to have to look at it a little bit more when I get in town. You know, but Alabama, I go back to the 1999 Duke team. They were probably the best team in the KenPom era at adjusted efficiency margin, and they lost. So it gives me some hope, I think, for Alabama to get the job done.
All right, we got to run, Michael. Safe travels. But last thing, tomorrow night, NIT final. Seton Hall, 3.5-point dogs against the Sycamores of Indiana State. Any thoughts in 5 seconds?
I'm going with Seton Hall, the better conference.
Oh, wow.
They're just, you know, more tougher defensively. I know they got the home crowd, Indiana State. But I think Seton Hall, they got robbed from getting the NCAA tournament. You know, they want, and so did Indiana State.
Okay.
But I just think they're a little bit tougher defensively.
Thank you, Michael. Safe travels. We'll see you here.
All right.
All right, guys. Little Thank NFL you. On the other side next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Check out VSiN.com. Just a quick glance once again. Just looking at the top here. Valero Texas Open odds, picks, and predictions. We'll talk a little Valero Texas Open later on the show.
Yeah, we will. Masters Primer out today as well.
Masters Primer in there. Live Miami best bets and golf odds from Wes Reynolds, and of course just a plethora of NCAA tournament stuff. Also that Michael Lombardi piece on Now or Never for Trevor, all at VSiN.com. Check it out, the new VSiN.com. Check it out today. It's Gil Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlin. So we mentioned the Stephon Diggs trade a little before we had Montesano on. So Stephon Diggs goes from the Buffalo Bills to the Houston Texans. What were the terms of the deal? Now we have a little more detail on this.
Yeah, so it's basically Diggs a fifth and a sixth to Houston for a second, I believe.
A second in 2025.
Correct, yes.
Next year, second, yeah. So C.J. Stroud now has at his disposal not only Stephon Diggs, but of course, you know, talking from days gone by, Nico Collins and Tank Dell. So that's quite a nice little receiving core now for C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you're Buffalo, you get out from under his contract, Stephon Diggs' contract, which I think they're probably thrilled about in Buffalo at this point. But if you look at their current roster, and we're, April 3rd, we have a draft in front of us, and obviously there's still time to pick up other randos. But if you look at their depth chart at wide receiver.
Curtis Samuel, welcome to number one.
Curtis Samuel becomes your wide receiver one?
Who else
Curtis
we got
Samuel,
there?
former Khalil Panther, Shakir. Former Skin.
Mac Hollins, of course, yeah.
Khalil Shakir, and Khalil Shakir is probably your number two. But, I mean, the rest of them are what? Shorter and Hollins and Hamler and those kind of guys.
Yeah, they got to make some additions, we'll say.
Yeah, they got to.
I think they'll be targeting that in the draft where there's supposed to be about 20 first-round wide receivers.
Of course, they have two great tight ends in Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox as well. But still, at wideout, a little thin now.
Yeah.
Whereas Houston is robust. I still like the under on Houston, though, based on the
season. I'm a big Josh Allen guy. I don't know. This whole Diggs thing, whatever's been going on there the past year or 2 years now, I'm wondering if they might be better moving on from him.
Diggs is just always upset on the sidelines, just always angry about something.
And there were games late in the year where he wasn't really a factor.
He was very ineffective this past season.
I mean, and then the drop. Oh, on that Josh Allen, 70-yard bomb right on the dot.
Oh, yeah.
And just boop. couldn't haul it in. Could have been one of the greatest plays we've ever seen in football. And he hauls that in, can't catch it.
Draft props are not robust quite yet, but we do have some interesting markets, specifically about specific players to specific teams.
Yeah.
Which team will draft J.J. McCarthy? This is available at DraftKings.
This got steamed big time yesterday. Yeah, yesterday.
Vikings are the short shot at plus 105. Followed by the Giants at plus 275. The Commodores are 3-1. Patriots plus 350. And then Broncos are plus 550. Everybody else, and by everybody else, I mean only one listed here, the Raiders.
Yeah, 30, no, everybody else. Everybody 35 else, to 1 yeah. or longer, yeah.
Okay, the Vikings got steamed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I have seen in a few of the mocks I've been kind of reading up on recently that it seems to be a strong belief the Vikings are going to trade up into that top 10 and take McCarthy. And the most popular one I've heard is the Chargers spot at number five they would trade into to grab him.
Would they have to? The Chargers wouldn't have to trade in to grab him at all. They could just sit at five and grab him probably, unless someone's bonus, you know, doing a smokescreen thing. Here's the thing. Vikings currently have the 11th pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does J.J. McCarthy fall to 11? I can't believe I'm saying fall
no,
to 11.
I know. It's
but
crazy.
Like, that's the way that it's being talked about now. He would have to fall to 11.
So, yeah,
the Chargers are at 5.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. The Vikings, I think what people are thinking is the Vikings need to trade up to that spot to get ahead of the Giants.
Gotcha.
Because the Giants might take
Chargers it. The Chargers were not listed there because they have Justin Herbert on that J.J. McCarthy list. As fond of J.J. McCarthy as Jim Harbaugh is, I would think that Jim Harbaugh is good. I mean, to me, the most connected team to a specific player, to me, is the Chargers and Joe Alt. I think it's clear they're going offensive linemen. So that to me is the biggest thing. Now it should be mentioned that what we were here a week ago.
Man, I hope you're wrong because that's where I've got neighbors going.
you have them drafting neighbors. Well, that could be.
But I agree with you. I think one of those positions is where they're
going to. I'm just saying if you're going to dive into one of these markets and you made me do one of them right now, that would be mine. The J.J. McCarthy thing, again, all of this is lying season, right? Because a week ago, wasn't even a week ago. Remember we were all that steam on McCarthy to go number two
yep.
to Washington? So that quickly has died down a little bit.
Yep.
You know who had a pretty...
I mean, it hasn't, right? I think the overall yeah. sentiment that he's still going to go way sooner than we would have thought right a month ago seems to be... I mean, at this point, it kind of seems like it's going to happen from everything we're hearing.
You know what's the best line about J.J. McCarthy going second is, and I don't quote him often on the show, is Bomani Jones.
Mm.
Bomani Jones has a line about that he goes, about the buzz of J.J. McCarthy going second to Washington. He goes, here's how I know J.J. McCarthy is not going second to Washington. He goes, because if J.J. McCarthy was going second to Washington, J.J. McCarthy would be going first. And his point there is that if you are that enamored by a guy, pardon me, who won a national championship, your narrative for loving J.J. McCarthy is he won a national championship, he made all the right decisions when he was asked to make plays, he made all the right plays, right? So it's not what was on the field, but it was he played as great as you can for what he was asked to do at the right times, and they won a title.
Right.
And so I understand his point. His point is if you buy into that so much as he is worthy of the number two pick, well, then why isn't he the number one pick either? That's his take on that. And so there is a little kernel of wisdom in that where it's like, yeah, no, I agree with that. He's not going to be one or two is my point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I get that. It is interesting.
So that's why the Vikings and other teams.
Yeah, because you've got special playmakers at the top, right?
Yeah.
With what we would consider Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels.
The Bo Nix thing is interesting. Because
this one is just as interesting to me.
Because the Broncos are really the only team that falls under the category of has shown tremendous interest in Bo Nix.
Like to a minus 150
to
effect?
To minus 150. Wow. Vikings 4-1, Raiders 5-1, Giants 7-1. But you get to, you know, if you hadn't had a feel for who's going to draft a quarterback or who covers a quarterback, it's the usual suspects towards the top of these. Vikings, Raiders, Giants.
Right, yeah. Yes, all the quarterback needy teams make sense, but like, I don't know, for this one to manifest, like, there's, don't know. There's a lot of different things that's got to go on for Denver to get in a position to get him.
Denver's like, at 12 currently.
Yeah, like, I mean, is it? I don't know. Like, are they?
Wait, but Denver doesn't have to trade up.
No,
for
no,
Bo
I'm not
Nicks.
Necessarily saying that. But you still got to wait for 11 picks to come off the board, and then we're everybody's assumed there's no other trades that happen, nothing else. Where this guy's just going to fall to him at 12? I'm just not running to play -150.
I mean,
for something
would,
like that.
He would be. He would be the fifth quarterback selected at 12 if they got him at 12, assuming Michael Penix wouldn't, you know, go before that. So it's just like, yeah, on the one hand, I hear what you're saying. On the other hand, really, like the five are going to be picked before 12?
It's insane. I know, it's insane. The I'm really wish I would have bet that the over 4.5 heavier than I did.
Over 4.5 on quarterback.
Yeah, because when those markets opened, I bet them both in town just to pick up some free money because it was over 4.5 and even money, and then under 4.5 in another shop here at +115. But that, like, there's five are going.
Of all the draft wisdom we have imparted, and I'm sure it's not just us over the years, the single most just consistently right one is teams justifiably, right? They go crazy for quarterbacks. Yeah. Quarterback needy teams go crazy for quarterbacks. They go Cocoa Puffs for quarterbacks in the first round because what's the Chris Collinsworth line? Most important position in football is quarterback. Second most important position is backup quarterback. Like, you're nothing without a quarterback. You're nothing. And if you don't have it, you are just a different category.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's justifiable, and they pray. Now, the talent assessment of this is the other side of it, which is that is the most inexact science there is. So on the one hand, you're justified going after it. On the other hand, there is rarely any, like, the success rate of actually picking the right guy is super low. And as our buddy Matt Brown has said, which I think is accurate, Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow specifically in modern times, and I went through it. Remember, I went draft by draft since that draft. Nobody has drafted well, with the exception of, you know, Trevor Lawrence was the first pick in the draft. He's the only quarterback since Burrow and Herbert were drafted that has done anything in this league. So it's the most inexact science there is.
And even that.
And even with that, they're still going to go crazy drafting these guys. So I don't know. I don't have any thoughts. I wouldn't recommend a bet on either of these at this point.
I would recommend not betting the favorites in both of these markets right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't lay -150 on the Broncos, that's for sure. We'll come back. The injury reporting in the NBA and what to do with the Sixers, specifically beyond that. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits.
Split
for free. Just sign up on VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/splits now to claim your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter baseball bets today. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is from Bees Bets. He said Steve Fezzik has to use the fine money to get down on -3,500 basketball plays. Just kidding, kinda. He said, talking about where Fezzik does with our with the pass post fines. Mr. Postman 619. I'm with Will. I have the Pirates over 74.5 wins, and yes, to make the playoffs +450. Great 5-0 start for the Buccos. Jeff Levine, eyeball opinion, Kansas City Royals much improved. Pitching, contact speed, young superstar. Recommend finding over wins 74 right now with sprinkle on division 9-1, where there is no clear standout. Okay. Tom Collins about the Bills. He's saying what we were saying. He said the Bills are eating like $30 million in dead cap to make this happen. And now their number one receiver is Khalil Shakir. And their best pick is number 28 overall. Jason H11, is it against VSiN policy for producers to play Sigma Derby live on air asking for Kelly?
Is it Jason who's always asking that? Someone ever wants me to play Sigma Derby on air.
Yes. Watch you go crazy. Yeah. Got you get excited. People like an excited Kelly Bidlin.
We'll do it on a summer Friday.
That's right. When we're lacking content for a day. Ladies and gentlemen, he comes to us from under a cloud of smoke in Southern California. You can follow him on Twitter at Spreadopedia. And he comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. It's Jason Weingarten. How you doing, Jason?
pretty good. I feel like playing Sigma Derby on air would be encouraged.
Not, yeah, you know, as a promotional tool for the D, you mean? Yeah.
No, I mean, just in general, like I would, I think you should be playing, you know,
yeah,
well, what do you call it, Sigma Derby on air.
The way to do that then would be just to be move this whole operation here over to that table, but then we'd have to box out like a bunch of people that want to play it. That'd probably be a problem.
Yeah, that would.
We could definitely set up over there. You kidding me?
Hey, Jason, so we're just going through those tweets right there. Somebody would, you know, we have one guy who loved the Royals, one guy who loved the Pirates there. What's been your very quick first week of baseball observations that might be, how can I put this? I said this to Borchardt earlier. Something that at least you've taken note of and you're like, maybe I should keep an eye on this.
Okay, you want one? The Marlins. I was so anti-Marlin last year, and I would just come on and say the meanest things about them, and they would find the dumbest ways to win. And I forget what their record was in what one-run games last year, but it was astronomically good, and it ended up costing me a lot of money. And now they're 0-5. They already had a team meeting.
I love the team meetings. Yes, this early.
How many have we had in baseball?
Two at least in the first week, which is abnormally high.
Marlins and A's. Yeah.
the Angels had one too after the second game of the season.
Oh right, so, the Angels, not least, the A's. I'm sorry. Yeah, the Angels. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, the Marlins just huge disappointment.
By the way, to answer your question, so last year the Marlins were 33-14 in one run games, 33-14, wow. 7-3 in extra innings. Yeah. And so managed to win 84 games when their pie fag should have been 74. We talked about that.
Yeah, right? That was a bummer last year. And of course this year I didn't bet the under, and it's you know, can't really take anything away from five games, but looks good through five games.
That's right. It sure does. Marlins currently the old Ofer right now to start the season at 0-6 with the -19 run differential. Have you added any awards? I wouldn't ask this of anybody else through five games or six games of a season, but of you, I will. Have you added anything?
Well, can we talk about the basketball for a minute?
Oh,
the
please.
NBA?
Yes, absolutely.
So I had two futures bets that I made before the NBA season, and then I promptly forgot about them. Well, only forgot about one of them, and then just really haven't paid attention. One of them is the Wembanyama Defensive Player of the Year, which does not sound like it's going to get there. But the other one is Naz Reid's Sixth Man of the Year.
Whoa, man.
I was looking at this a couple days ago. I showed Preston, who also has the bet. I say, hey, look, we're going to get second place in Wembanyama. And Naz Reid, Malik Monk's like -1100, Reed's the second favorite. Then I look the next day, and all of a sudden the odds have dropped significantly. I have no idea what happens. Turns out Malik Monk's hurt.
Yes.
Wanted to get your guys' opinion. What do you think's going on there? Am I all of a sudden live with my Naz Reid ticket?
Oh, you're live.
I think you're very live, Jason. What number do you guys have on that?
50.
Oh, man.
I'm actually surprised it's not longer. Wow, that's a great ticket. I mean, I think Naz Reid might end up winning this award. I don't think it's going to be Malik Monk. I'll say that right now. I do not think it's going
to
be Malik Monk.
No, because it's enough games still to go. I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's still 10% of the season, right?
And we broke it down yesterday. There's not that big of an edge between like top four guys in their stats.
The only thing you have, and I do disagree with JVT. JVT was on a little earlier, and he was talking about how, you know, Reid as a starter, that should not... I'm paraphrasing, but he was basically saying that he should get credit for what he does as a starter, yeah, too. I don't know that I view it that way. So that to me is the answer, Jason. Yes, you're live, but I think the problem, or really the sort of the fly in the ointment, is how many of the voters will now say, because he's starting a lot of games, how many of those voters will be like, yeah, well, that's great, but those aren't sixth man stats, and so I can't vote for him because of that. And I think there will be some voters who will be on the JVT side, which is, it doesn't matter. He's still played enough at six man, so I'm still going to vote for him. And I'll count those.
Yeah.
So I think that's the rub.
I can see that. I mean, I think stepping in and starting when your team needs you should still be counted, you know, as a six man sort of role. But again, I'm not a voter. I didn't pay attention to this any of the year. The only thing I could say, or the only thing I can add, is I think historically, and I'd have to actually look this up, but it works for all sort of awards. Usually you don't win awards when you spend the last 10% of the season injured.
That's right.
Otani last year was a bit of an exception. I think being hurt really hurts Monk, and Reed gets the last opportunity to kind of make a statement. So I'm pretty excited about that all of a sudden.
I also don't think your Wembanyama is dead either. I'm just going to say it. I don't think it's dead.
I do. I mean, he's still like 12-1. I mean, you could bet so much on this if you think it's wrong. Like, I think I will.
Here's the thing.
I want it. I want it to win.
No, I know. We all do. But I guess what I'm saying is, there has never, in none of these award markets in any sport, are a true reflection of what is actually at play, for all we know, right? Because we don't know what these guys are thinking. The most indication we have is like a straw poll that was done on MVP in the NBA this morning. We have some sense of what some folks might be thinking about an award. But generally speaking, we don't really know how accurate that Gobert-Wembanyama difference is. Right, it's probably way more narrow. Doesn't mean that I think Wembanyama is the favorite. I don't. Right, but 12—the fact that 12, there were some numbers as the season approached, as the beginning of the season approached. I know some people have like 50-1 on it, whatever. But I think right before the season, it wasn't that much longer than it is now, which is an insane thing to think about. That he's now played 60 basketball games at the height of defensive prowess, and he's barely moved in the market. It's insane. What are we doing? I don't know. I think he has a chance. I think cooler heads are about to prevail. Brian Windhorst, just on a podcast this morning, he talked about it. He's going to vote for Wembanyama now. What is March of the Penguins, Kelly? And nobody knows, but one day, one penguin moves 1 foot. Just follow him and migrate across Antarctica. That was my Morgan Freeman, Kelly. Jason, sorry about that. Is Jason still with us? I'm sorry. Jason, are you there?
I'm right here.
Any baseball plays? We got a minute left. Any baseball plays today?
Not much today. I'm still kind of, you know, waiting around. I haven't really bet much sidewise. When I do bet, I'm just kind of doing some square stuff, like betting against the A's because they're the A's. Real embarrassing stuff with Oakland. I just can't believe it. But I guess just because we're running out of time, can we talk about Juan Soto real quick?
It took
a week for the market to sort of coalesce that Juan Soto is the best player in the NL, the AL. I honestly don't know if he's going to give up that spot at the top of the MVP market all year in the American League. He's really good. I just wanted to say how much I love Juan Soto.
Okay, there you go. Jason and I had him at 100-1 a couple years back, and he finished in second to Bryce Harper. That one hurt. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it. Jason Weingarten, everybody, from Under a Cloud of Smoke. The connection was getting jankier as that one went on.
Yeah.
Maybe it's time to get out. All right, we got tennis, golf, and Embiid and the injury report. Next, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
DraftKings has a great hookup right now. Exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. You earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. Nothing wrong with that right there. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now and use code ANG when you sign up. That's code ANG. And earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager now.
I don't do it for this one, Gil.
I know you don't.
Like the NBA awards, there are rules to these things.
No. Except I don't think we're reading the other one as much, so I wanted to like give you an in.
Yeah,
on
I
this
think it's
one.
Gone. Yeah. I think it's gone.
So we're gonna have to have Kelly just chime in on another one. Okay, let's get to a few things here real quick before the end of the show. One, tennis. VSiN.com/picks for all subscribers. Every host, every guest on this network, every sport, every single one of their picks gets put on VSiN.com/picks. Got to be a subscriber. The reason I bring that up is because my one tennis play of the day, I'm on Taylor Townsend. Taylor Townsend in Charleston, South Carolina, the Charleston Open, again on Hartrue, a hybrid surface, which is a nice way for the ladies to segue from hard courts to the slow red clay of Europe, which is coming up. Hartrue, which I played on multiple times in Florida with Deborah Song, fashion stylist.
Do they look like clay?
No, it's like a green gray.
Okay. So it's not granular.
It is granular.
Oh, it is granular.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But it's not. It's not like clay.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's not that.
Because I feel like Florida's got a lot of clay courts. That's what
No. Their Hartrue is all over the state of Florida.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, the state of Florida is overrun by Hartrue. Again, it comes from a quarry. The material comes from a quarry in Charlottesville, Virginia. And a lot of the southeast of this country has Hartrue courts. Charleston, where they're playing today. I got Taylor Townsend last night at VSiN.com/picks. Here was the point of all this, bringing that up. Sorry about the whole Hartrue sidebar.
I'm about to Google who owns this quarry. I want to buy in on this quarry.
Kelly, you need to own a quarry.
You're just out there making tennis courts? Like it's a monopoly on one type of tennis court.
To start a quarry, I don't know how much that takes. You got to dig pretty aggressively and then come up with a surface and then call up the ATP and the WTA and go, you should play on the
quarry. I got a new surface for you.
That's right.
The Kelly Hardcourt, okay?
All right, so Taylor Townsend was at +126 last night when I gave it out at VSiN.com/picks. She is now just +105 against Ekaterina Alexandrova. The question becomes, would I play it at +105? And the answer is that's teetering. I'm not going to tell you not to, but it sort of like breaks the rules a little bit, if you know what I mean. So Taylor Townsend was the play at +126. I don't know that I would have necessarily recommended her at +105. I might have. It's like right on the edge. And I'd love to update you about our play yesterday, Kelly, on Federico Correa in over there in Estoril, which is in Portugal. But it still hasn't resumed. They played three games. We're down a break. Still hasn't resumed, so I don't have any result on that.
What happened? Just
inclement weather.
Oh, weather. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if there was like light, if it was darkness or something. Sorry, but I'm trying to look up this quarry right now. Okay, it's really...
Okay, well, you look up the quarry. Yesterday, Joel Embiid ended up playing for the Sixers. By the way, he had himself, all the Wembanyama talk, he had himself a nice little stat line in the Sixers win over the Thunder, though SGA did not play for the Thunder. No Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
No Jalen Williams.
No relation.
No Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah. Embiid 25-6-7 in his return. Also had 3 steals, 6 turnovers, it should be mentioned. But, you know, the injury report was, you know, at first he was like, well, he's not playing at all. You know, he's not going to play. And then all of a sudden he was playing. And so there you go, NBA handicappers, enjoy that kind of life.
Yep.
What do you do with the Sixers right now in terms of any postseason thoughts? Because they are 2 losses, in the loss column, they're 2 behind the top 6. There's no threat of them falling to 9 or 10. So they're 2, and one of the teams that they're 2 losses behind, you'd have to overcome both. Is it the Heat and the Pacers, I believe?
Yeah, Heat and Pacers play the Heat on Thursday.
They play the Heat tomorrow in Miami, which has a huge effect on that, because if Miami wins that, you can Katie bar the door of them getting in the top 6. So then they are going to be in the play-in, 7-8 play-in. For them not to get into the playoffs, it would require them losing 2 in a row.
Yeah.
They would only have to win 1 of 2 games.
It's very fascinating to me right now, because that is a, if you believe... This is the only way I would bet this. But I do think, I mean, let's not forget what Joel Embiid did at the beginning of the season. He was the MVP without a doubt, number one with a bullet. Forget everybody else we're even talking about right now. That's how good of a season he was having. I mean, Gil, if they, this is again, I love the play-in tournament, right? Because these questions arise, and it is... I think if you could tell me for sure they would grab that 6th seed, I'd be in on the Sixers right now, for sure. There's not that much competition in the Eastern Conference. The Boston Celtics are amazing. We haven't talked about the Boston Celtics enough. You just go like, some of the simple rating systems over time, Gil, where you take like record versus strength of schedule and net rating, what you've done in the season. The Boston Celtics are having like a top 5 season in the history of the NBA right now. And nobody even really talks about it. Now, Do I think they're that good? Yes, I think they're that good. But how many other true contenders are there? We've seen the problems with the Milwaukee Bucks. There's no reason why the Sixers couldn't win the Eastern Conference if you get a healthy Embiid to me. So if you believe he's going to be healthy and they can grab that six seed, I would be hammering these bets right now. I'm just not there because I think if you get into a play-in situation, we already know that's immediately dicey, right? You could lose one game, possibly. They're probably not going to be there. They'll be 7 or 8, so you're going to have to lose twice to get bounced. But still, you lose twice, you're out of it completely. And if you advance from there, you're playing the Bucks or the Celtics in round one and haven't really given Embiid a whole lot of time to get healthy. So it's really, really interesting. I think it's a really interesting betting topic right now because it is – I wouldn't hate you if you wanted to go out there and take a 13-14-1 on them to win the Eastern Conference and whatever to win the NBA Finals. You could, a few weeks from now, end up having really, really good tickets on the Sixers. I don't believe they're going to pass the Pacers. I know a lot of people do. I'm not in that camp, Gil, so I can't make that bet right.
Sixers to make the play-in, minus 1,000. Sixers to make the playoffs, remember, two routes, mm-hmm. either regular season to get in the top six or winning one of two once you're in the play-in because they're going to be in the 7-8 to make the playoffs minus 1100. The no is 6-1. No bite on the no. They have a super easy schedule to try to get into the top six to begin with. But again, if the Heat beat them tomorrow, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah. Right. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. It's still a play-in. It's not a lock that you win. That you don't lose two in a row.
No, I had to bet that one way or the other, would be the no, without a doubt. Yeah. Because of, I feel like people don't think about that. I mean, it's two games you're talking about potentially. I mean, you two losses, you're out. See you later.
Yep. All right. Warm up to the Masters. Let me just say before you even give your picks, Valero, Texas Open, the week before the Masters, do you bet tournaments before majors differently?
A little bit. I think it's just more of which guys you have to be a little careful with. I think there are some guys like Rory this week is probably a perfect example of you got a lot of guys in this tournament. It's a great field this week, but you got a bunch of guys that are coming in that are completely not in form. Headed with the Masters just a week away. I mean, Rory McIlroy, Max Homa, Colin Morikawa. These are stars of the game who really haven't done much this season. So I don't know how many guys I would warn people to tread lightly with, Gil. I have no interest with Rory. And with the current number he's at, though, 9-1 to win this tournament, the guy really hasn't done a whole lot on tour so far this season. And I do think all he cares about is the Masters a week from now. He's a guy, Matt and I talked about it on Long Shots yesterday. Download now the full episode. You can go listen to all our picks there. He brought up, I'm fading him in a matchup against Matsuyama. Like, Matt brought that one up. I'm playing that. Matsuyama's a guy I'm pretty high on this week. He comes in. Is he a guy that might be looking a little bit more towards next week? Sure. He is in form so far this season. Has some good tournament finishes. T6 at the Players. He's won already. Won at the Genesis. T12 at the API. Really good season he's putting together. I already have a Masters bet in on him. I did bet him this week, though, with a top 20 as well. Corey Connors. This is the only place he's won at in his career. So I'm in on Corey Connors. He's having a pretty good season. T13 of the Players, T18 of the API. He was a pretty high model result for me this week. So I am in. Only two outrights for me this week, Hideki and Connors. Top 20s on Hideki, Connors, Alex Noren, Keith Mitchell, and then a few tournament matchups for me this week. But, yeah, it's definitely the biggest lesson I would try to impart on people, Gil, is – don't be mad at yourself for whatever you bet this week as you're leading into next week. You know what? If you're getting excited about betting the Masters, you don't want to come out of this tournament upset about
great
something.
Point.
So whatever that means, dial back to that level.
Last two things, just to tie up some loose ends here. If the Celtics win their last 7 regular season games, they will tie for the 15th best record in the history of the NBA, 82 game schedule. And I would like to vote for the most confusing moment of today's show over the last 2 hours. That would be the discussion about the Tampa Bay Rays stadium and day night splits.
Did get a couple tweets about that.
Just want to throw that out there. We've done all we can do. Gojo and Golic are next. Enjoy from Visa, the Sports Betting Network.